a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I pray. Can't you say goodbye to the good old days? They're never coming back. Watch a future.
Happy Monday, everybody. What's going on? Welcome to Pump Up Foods Live. Happy Monday to you. How's your Monday? Happy spring. Right? Kinda. Spring, if it's in the northeast, it still feels like it's freaking winter time. Because guess what? We got snow again. Yeah, more snow. Seriously, like, it's supposed to be springtime, man. And I couldn't be more ready for it. I'm looking forward to strapping on. I've been, believe it or not, working on my girlish figure. So I can wear my beautiful summer Speedo. I can strap it on and walk down the beach with my chest perked out and my head held high. And I can look at everybody and say, listen, this right here, this farmer-tanned, boot-wearing, Speedo-wearing chef with his chest stuck out proudly and his head held high. This is what 40 years old looks like on the beach. That's right. I'm working on my figure. Well, maybe not. Maybe we shouldn't picture any of that. Maybe we shouldn't picture any of that. That might be a little bit much. Nonetheless, welcome to Plum Love Foods Live here on a Monday night on the second or third day of spring, man. Hope you guys are all doing well. Hope your week's off to a great start. Mine started off a little bit late, but we're good. We're rocking and rolling. I went to the lovely city of New York today and did some work, and now I'm here doing my favorite thing to do on a Monday night, hang out and talk to you guys on Plum Love Foods Live. I appreciate you downloading me. I appreciate you listening live. I appreciate all those things. Because listen, if we don't work together, if we don't appreciate each other, what do we appreciate? Because listen, everybody, this is an important thing I want to point out to you right now. And I want you to remember this every single day the rest of your life. There's only one April 2nd, 2018. Only one. And it's right now. What did you do today? And tomorrow will be the only April 3rd, 2018. What did you do? Hope it was worth it. Hope you made it last. Hope you made it memorable. And if you didn't, the good news is always tomorrow to try again. There you go. That's me sitting on my high horse, not my high horse, my apple crate, my soapbox, so to speak. Why did I say so to speak? I never say so to speak. That was so stupid. Anyway, you guys, got a great program tonight, you guys. We're hanging out with my good friend Linda Cavanaugh from MaxX PR. She is awesome. I've become good friends with her. She's been working with me on our mini-series restaurant road trip, hanging out in Norwalk with Norwalk Now. Lynn has become one of those people who I just can't get enough of. I think she's fantastic. I think she's super smart. She's been in this game a long time, guys, so it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of those questions, a lot of those things that I may say that are slightly controversial in this program when it comes to the business, especially the marketing side of this business, I think I'm going to ask Lynn and see what she thinks. I mean, she's got a ton of experience in the business, a ton of experience from a PR standpoint. What's the justification? Am I right or am I completely wrong and off base? And if I am completely wrong and off base, I promise you, I will spin it so that I'm not. Yes, folks, that's right. I will spin that so I am not wrong. And it sounds like I just had a different opinion, but I still am on the same wavelength. I'm kidding. I will fully admit, if I said, you know what, something I've said in the past year on this program, I am completely wrong, and that is not how to do business. So Lynn will hopefully answer those questions. But listen, we're coming off a wonderful holiday weekend here in our culinary world, especially a weekend where, as a private chef, for me, there's a lot of things that happen on Passover weekend. Happy Zombie Day for all of you out there. I'm not a religious person, but I don't hate on people who are religious. That's your choice. That's fine. I did a beautiful Passover dinner, as I'm sure a lot of you did, and a lot of you probably did Easter dinners, Easter brunches. I think it's interesting because the calendar really dictates what kind of food we make. And if you really think about that, it's kind of a crazy thought. Like we, based on the days of the week, based on the days of the season, is how we cook. And if you really start to put your brain to it and think a lot about that, it's kind of insane because, listen, the calendar's not a real thing. These holidays, whatever you, based on what you believe, are not real things, or they are real things, or however you look at it, but still. As opposed to having every day be a special day where we make a beautiful brunch, or we're making an amazing dinner. You know, on this particular one, well, we did a Passover dinner, or we're doing an Easter brunch. And I don't know. I feel like it's when we come to these holidays that we look for the options to do different things, to cook different types of food. You know, I made a flourless chocolate cake on Friday, and I haven't done that in forever, man, because I was making a Passover dinner, which obviously you can't have any kind of, you know, flour or things like that. And I made a chocolate cake, and it hit me, a flourless chocolate cake. It hit me. You know, it's delicious. Like, it was really good, and I haven't made it in so long, and I kind of wondered why, and I think that it just, some of these things that we make for these holidays, I think that we should spend more time on, and we should make them on a regular basis. You know, I should make flourless chocolate cake more often. It wasn't hard. You know, it took a little time, but it wasn't hard, but it was delicious, and I haven't had that in my repertoire in forever, and I thought to myself, man, I should really make this more often, because it's delicious. You know, I braised a brisket. Now, I braise things all the time, but brisket isn't a particular piece I braise very often because it takes a long time to cook. I braised it off, and I did it with a little mustard and red wine, lots of herbs and onion. It was really, I mean, it was delicious. These are things that I think that I'm going to put back into my repertoire, even though we may think of them as seasonal food, especially when it comes to religious holidays and whatnot. But I haven't done it, and I did them, and they were great. I'm sure there's other things that people cook on these holidays and that become, you know, kind of thought of as a seasonal type food. For instance, dinner, on an Easter dinner I did, there was a ham. It was a baked ham. And I got to be honest with you, baked ham is delicious. Like, I should do that more often. Now, it sounds kind of lame when you tell somebody, hey, for your event, for your party, for your, you know, whatever you're doing, I think we should do a baked ham. And they're going to say, that's kind of crazy, really? Then you're going to make it, and they're going to be like, wow, what a great idea. What an out-of-the-box thinker to add this to our dinner. But listen, it's not really an out-of-the-box sort of thing. It's just a baked ham. Like, it's not anything special. But no one does it anymore, because they think of it as a holiday meal, a seasonal meal, just like me and my flourless chocolate cake. I haven't made that forever. You know, I don't really have any gluten-free clients anymore. Like, I don't have a reason to do that. And, you know, I happen to have one this past week for Passover, and you know, I made my cake, and God, it came out really good. And I thought to myself, I should be making this all the time for bachelorette parties, for my particular clients, even for a pop-up dinner, like a flourless chocolate cake. Like, it's such a simple thing. But it's one of those things I think that gets looked over because it's thought of as seasonal. It's thought of as, you know, it's I don't know. I mean, in my book it is. I just never would think to do that. And I think the fun part about these holidays is that you look at the foods that you make, you know, maybe during these holidays, you know, whether it's you know, a Passover dinner, or whether it's an Easter dinner, or Christmas, or whatever the holiday, even St. Patrick's Day. Some of these foods maybe shouldn't just be for the holidays. Maybe they should be for other times of the year because they're so delicious. We all look forward to having them on said holiday. Why don't we make them on, you know, when it's not a holiday? Why don't we do a corned beef and, you know, like a, you know, a corned beef and cabbage in the middle of summer? Yeah, it's heavy. Yeah, it's hot. Does it fit the time frame? No, but guess what? It's delicious. It's out of the box thinking. That was probably a poor example now that I'm more and more thinking about that. Trying to convince someone I'm going to make them corned beef and cabbage for their fun Hamptons barbecue outside probably isn't going to work. But there's different ways you can do it, different techniques you can do with that. Braising cabbage is old as time is, and it's delicious. And I think it's one of those things that we should do more of. You know, I don't know. I just think that sometimes we get so wrapped up in our seasonal cooking, our holiday type cooking, that we don't realize how we can use those recipes, those ideas, those things in other places, you know, in other parties, in other events, in other menus on our restaurant. You know, our good friend Chef John Brennan, he is doing it's funny, he's doing a pop-up menu, a pop-up shop inside of his restaurant. Hot chicken and waffles, and I'm going to try to go there on Friday and eat. I can't wait. John just got a big write-up from Food Network about being some of the best waffles in the state, which is pretty cool. Good for him, man. I love that guy. He's a great chef and a fun dude, and he's always around, and he's always willing to help with whatever. But here's the thing about it. You know, you get a write-up like that, you get someone talking to you about that, he's doing a dish, chicken and waffles. Like, you know, it's kind of trendy. I get it. But he's doing different versions of it, and people dig it. He's got Jack Daniels teaming up with him to do it. I don't know. I think it's kind of out-of-the-box thinking. you know, he's taken his regular restaurant and changed it around to the fact where that's what he's doing now. In there, it's a menu that you can select. So I think that's an example of taking a meal that may not seem. I mean, chicken and waffles isn't really a springtime, warmer weather sort of meal, right? That's not what it is. It's not that sort of meal. However, serving at this time of year is a change of pace. I think people might like it. So big props to him. Anyway, guys, you know what? I'm talking about like a seasonal item, and I guess seasonal menus is kind of what I'm kind of getting towards. And I believe that seasonal menus should be based, you know, your menu should be based off what you can find and what you can find locally. And in my personal view, it's within 100 miles of you for the most part, for your general menu items, obviously, especially things you want to get, but within 100 miles of you. I think if it's not, then you can't really call it a local menu. But within 100 miles, and I think this should change with the seasons, it should be based off of what you can get. There is zero reason for anybody here in the Northeast to be serving tomatoes right now. In my brain, the second I see that, I'm like, okay, this person doesn't really know what they're doing. There's nothing worse than going to a restaurant and finding out on their menu, it's January, it's February, and you see vine-ripened tomatoes and burrata. Really? Because where are you getting your vine-ripened tomatoes from? Because honestly, you shouldn't be serving that this time of year. It's just, it's not the right dish. It's wrong. It's incorrect. Wrong. You are wrong. I don't know. That's my opinion of it. But maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's something that we'll have to ask our PR expert, because how I look at it is, I guess maybe it's a staple, people love it, but you can still serve a burrata with tomatoes, but don't call them vine-ripened fresh tomatoes. That's not what they are. That's not what they are. They ripened in a box on a truck up from Mexico. Stop fucking lying to people. Be honest. You want to serve that? I love the idea of serving that, but let's concassate them and then roast them and serve it that way with a little like baguette. That sounds delicious. Now you're being honest. I don't know. I think it should change at least four times a year with the seasons based on what you can get locally within 100 miles of you. That's my thoughts on a local menu. If I were to run a restaurant right now, which I have zero want to in my body, but if I were going to, that's how my menu would be. It would change constantly. But big shout out to my friend John Brennan, Chef John Brennan. You know, he's taken an item such as chicken and waffles, he's going to start doing it in the springtime. I love that. And calling it a pop-up shop. That's great. Anyway, guys, it was educational for me. Listen, doing these holiday foods, I think they should be part of our regular repertoire. Like I said, I made flourless chocolate cake on for a Passover dinner. I haven't done that in, 15 years, maybe that long, 15 years. And it was delicious. And I'm going to start adding it to my repertoire of doing desserts and things like that for parties and catering, because I think it's a delicious dish to make. It was awesome. So I think we should add it to it. And, you know, some of those other items. So all I want you to do is think about this. When you're doing parties, when you're working in your menu, you're doing things in your restaurant, you're doing specials, think about things that maybe could be regular holiday-type foods, and maybe don't serve them on the holiday, because you never know. People might order the hell out of it because they think it's a change of pace. That's my two cents. Anyway, you guys, check it out. I'm going to play a song. I'm going to get my ducks in a row, get my cocktail set, and yes, for all of you who are wondering, I am still drinking. I see your tweet coming at me. I'm drinking my diet ginger beer with vodka. Yes, I am, because I am, like I said, working my way back to where I can put on my green sequin Speedo, my combat boots, and puff my chest out on the beach and look high in the sky with my purple zinc on my nose and say to everybody, this, ladies and gentlemen, is what a 40-year-old chef who's not drinking beer and enjoys diet ginger beer cocktails on the beach looks like. That's my plan. Will it happen? I don't know. But if it does, make sure. You can be sure that I will Facebook Live it for everyone so you can see it. Or Instagram Live, I guess. I should stop saying Facebook. I'm getting yelled at for that these days. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back with my good friend Linda Cavanaugh from MaxxPR. I'm going to see how much she's going to yell at me for some of the things I might have said. Because, you know, from a PR standpoint, it's not always, you know, your boys sometimes can kind of be a handful. Let's just leave it at that. Ladies and gentlemen, one thing I want to ask you, if you can, do me a favor. Go on them iTunes and throw us a rating, a 5-star rating, if you don't mind. And if you want to write a review and subscribe, because if you subscribe, it comes right to your phone for free. This show goes out every week for free, and we have great guests. We talk to cool people. It's a great food conversation. So do me a favor. Subscribe, rate, review, all those things. It's great for the algorithm. Helps us out tremendously, and thank you for those who've already done it. Anyway, guys, I'll be right back. Stay right there. I'm going to play a quick tune, and we'll be right back hanging out with my good friend Linda Cavanaugh from MaxxPR. Stay right there, guys. You're checking out Plumbo Foods Live. Be right back.
Yeah, he's a real screwball, if you ask me. Look at the way he's always sending warnings to the newspapers before he blows another batch of pedestrians to Hades.
Yeah, and have you noticed? He always ends his notes by saying,
"The scent of danger takes me to the edge of panic. Now I'm caught in the plot that was thought up. Satanic like mayo, deo, daylight comes and I want to get home before I'm burnt by the sun." Twelfth sign of the seventh scourge.
And the first is a sleeper steeped in the force of the dark side of strife. Behold a pale horse.
And the source be above the law like Seagal.
The thought of his stare raised my hand like Vidal.
Now he stalks where I walk, setting soldiers at the border. I'd hope to catch Guevara acting out of order.
Just meet a fool like Ozzy meets a bat.
And the fact is I was kidnapped, thrown in the back of the unmarked van. Destination unknown, in league with the intrigue out of Oliver Stone. Was thought in Revolution 33 and a third. Was all I heard.
In the jurisdiction, mark the prediction. Cause I'm too stranger than fiction. From the get-go, the watcher said so. Beware Sergeant Stiletto.
Shake Wilbur, it takes the fifth of those who would drag me under.
Like coyotes. Runner.
Now the population faces incarceration while select serpents reach certain circles of illumination.
Looking over my shoulder, I'm seeing shadows on the walls. I'm turning pallid at the thought of the gallows and the gables who before me can't neglect the connection. Seven on the signs of the cross on the pendulum stiletto. The name of the nemesis, Guevara.
I'm trapped in the labyrinth.
Assassins be passing me and I amongst their midst. Before my name is known,
no.
I slip into the mist. I exist, the specialist who persists to vent the secret entrance I decipher. The hieroglyphs, ta-da! The creaking floor reveals the door, voila! And I emerge into the crypt.
In the jurisdiction, mark the prediction. Cause I'm too stranger than fiction. From the get-go, the watcher said so. Beware, Sergeant Stiletto.
I love that song, man. That's a great band. We need more bands like that these days. Two Skinny Jays was awesome. I used to do security at a club called The Flood Zone in Richmond, Virginia, and Two Skinny Jays came twice, and that's how I found out about them, doing security for their show. It was awesome. I mean, it's like it was a white dude, a black dude that were rapping and singing, and the band, there was like an accordion player, a guitar player, a bass player. The dude played a keytar, you know, like this, it was like a guitar, but it's a keyboard, drummer, a DJ. Really fun band, man. They were awesome. They would fight like aliens and stuff on stage. Super cool. I think we should have more alien fighting, right? No? Anyway, you guys, welcome back. Plum Love Foods Live right here. Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and everywhere else you can find your podcast and live digital broadcast. Tonight, it's all about PR in our industry, the industry of hospitality. There's a lot of questions, a lot of things that go on that are they right? Are they wrong? Is it the right way to go? I don't know. I've done my stuff pretty much on my own without any real PR direction. Insert joke here. But lately, I've been doing a really fun project with Norwalk Now, which is a town here in Southern Fairfield County of Connecticut, where I've been working with Max XPR and, of course, the lovely Linda Cavanaugh, who I have become good friends with. She's great. She's one of those people, and we've all met them, as people in life that you meet that you just feel comfortable with immediately. You just feel like this person's here to help make the best product possible and isn't afraid to get her hands dirty, to jump in there. I love people like that. I love people who come across positive. I love people who want to put a positive spin on our business, which sometimes does not always have the most positive spins to it. It even almost can have a negative connotation to it. But Linda's not that at all. She's been there as a chef, as a PR person, traveling all over the place, even as a host. She's kind of done it all. But the fun part is, when you meet someone like this, you want to talk to them more and more. That's all I can do. All I want to do is keep talking to her because I feel like I could talk to her for 2 or 3 hours. We're doing a set. We're shooting Restaurant Road Trip, and I'm just running my mouth talking her ear off. That's what I do all the time. Lynn, good evening, dear. How are you?
Good evening. Nice to spend the night with you.
Wow. Okay.
I know. And then this is where you say, what are you wearing?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if I think I need to have another cocktail and then we can have that conversation, but we'll see. I mean,
right.
Listen, hey,
I think I'm still coming. I'm still coming down off the Speedo comment earlier.
Oh, well, listen, my chest, barrel chest pushed out and head held high. That's what I'm doing. That's why I'm not drinking beer. That's it right there. Listen, I meant that too. You meet people in this business and you kind of know right away if it's going to work or not, if it's a mesh. You know, not that they're bad people or good people. It's just not everybody works together. Not everybody meshes well. And second I met you and shook your hand and then gave you a hug, I just knew, I was like, this woman is awesome. She's the best. I think she's great. And, you know, I've told a lot of people that from, you know, since we first started working together. And it's true. Like, you really come across as incredibly, I don't know, like trustworthy, likable, fun. Like you just, like you have the best intentions. That's, how about that? That's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Well, thank you first and foremost. And the feeling is mutual. And I do believe there is synergy. I think there's, you know, synergy with people that you collaborate with. I think there's synergy with clients, you know, and sometimes they're not, and it's not a fit and you can't force it. And I think, you know, in our case, there was definitely a sense of, you know, we both had the same good intentions. You know, we both had a mission, and you know what? I think we were both enjoying it, and I think that's really where it stems from. Like, we were both enjoying what we're doing, and that's what it's all about.
You know, isn't that a much better start than straight off like, "Hey, here's Linda. Hey, what are you wearing?" Isn't that like a much better, like, now it's a little bit easier to ask that. Like, Linda, an icebreaker there. No, I'm kidding. But listen, it's true. And, you know, it comes from, I think, you know, the second you talk to you, or I talk to you, or anyone talks to you, they can tell you've been in the business a long time. You've spent time in a kitchen. You understand kind of what it takes, or what you speak the language, I guess, is what I'm saying. And you get the bad jokes. You don't shy away from them. You kind of almost help push them on even further. You know, but that makes people comfortable, I think, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I always wondered when I would meet other publicists, and you know, they were intrigued by our industry. But I always wondered really where, if they really, you know, had a true understanding of it. And I think, you know, I think that's one of the things that myself and also my team, because they're all restaurant people, restaurant backgrounds, food backgrounds. I think that's one of the reasons why we've been doing what we've been doing for so long and still digging it. And I think the people that we work with can, you know, appreciate, you know, that we're genuine. You know, we're not just in this because, hey, you know, we think it's going to be fun. It's food. You know, it really doesn't come from that. We really respect the industry. We respect the people. You know, it's so glamorized on the outside. And Lord, it's not like that on the back end. You know, so I think that's the difference, you know, perhaps. It's no different than I probably wouldn't be as effective promoting another industry that I didn't really have a true understanding for.
Right. You know, it's one of those things, I think, that you got to understand what it is that you're actually promoting. You know, I think that when you've actually worked in the business, you get that. Now, for you, how important is that? How important is it that, you know, you kind of have that rapport with people. Because I know I've met some PR people in the past, and you know, who it's a paycheck, you know, they're just like, well, listen, I'm offering X, Y, and Z for the client, and here's my paycheck from them, and you know, where you, I don't think it's like that at all. You kind of want to you want to make a whole plan, like a long term plan.
Yeah, well, I become vested. I'm very territorial of this industry. You know, so by nature, then I get very territorial with clients or even the craft.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, we've been around for 20 years. This is our 20th anniversary, crazy enough. And one of the things that some of the people that were helping to promote the fact that we've been around this long, you know, wanted to talk about me. But you couldn't really talk about me because it wasn't about that. It was about this company evolving, you know, with the industry, and my connection to the industry, I'm sure is a part of it. But it's again, it's personal. I'm very territorial. I have a passion for it. I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier. You had one of your chefs say, you know, it's a love it or hate it relationship. You know, you're either hooked. Right. And you're in it for the long haul, or you just can't wait to get out. And, you know, even after I left the kitchen side of things, I didn't want to leave it. I really didn't. I might have been burnt out, you know, from a chef standpoint. I was catering. I was behind the line. It was grueling. It was physical. You know, I cried uncle. I did. I tapped out. But I didn't want to tap out of the industry as a whole, because there's definitely a passion, you know, a love and a respect for you guys.
It's a hard job, that's for sure. But, you know, I said it before in this program. I think you get such a respect for it, you know, no matter what, and it's not about me here, but you know, it's no matter what's happened in my life, food has always been there for me. Food has put a roof over my head. Mm-hmm. Food has given me my wife. Food has given me my family. You know, food has put me on the phone with you right now talking about food. Like, food has given me all these things. And I think the second that you don't respect that, it all goes away. And no matter what happens, no matter how bad it gets for me, I can always count on food to help me, to you know, put a roof over my head. And this is the funny part about it, Lynn, is that I used to always say to people, you know, oh, I got 20 years experience in the business, 20 years in experience. You know, I started collecting a paycheck working in restaurants in 1994. So I kind of use that as my barometer. And that's almost 25 years now. That's fucking crazy. Like, have I been doing this that long? That's insane.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, people kept bringing up like the 20 years of Max X. Then I reminded them, but yeah, there was 11 years before that was the restaurant industry. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's insane. And it goes by so fast and so slow at the same time. Now, listen, you've got over 250 restaurants here in the Northeast you guys have worked with. That's crazy talk. How many clients do you try to keep, you know, at once? Like, is it too many? Is there, you know, is always never enough? Or what is like the general kind of your rule of thumb?
Oh, well, there's absolutely a cap. We don't, referencing the comment before that it might be a paycheck for some people, we do not take on any more than we can handle, because then we'll look like assholes, and that's not going to happen. I'm pretty tough on that. Sometimes, you know, the girls, you know, my team, Julie, Kate, and Andrea, you know, they get excited. You know, we have an opportunity to take something on, and of course they want to do it. You know, and I really have to sit back and evaluate where we're at with each client. You know, how much we're already putting in. You know, what some of the contracts call for. You know, more is not better. You know, if I can't do good by a client, you know, I'm only as good as my last client, you know, and so it's very much, you know, reputation driven and results driven. And so, no, we do not take on more than we can handle. As far as the amount, interesting with PR and marketing is that, you know, at any given time, you know, we could be working on different focuses for each client. So there may be a restaurant that's brand spanking new, so we're working on soup to nuts. Whereas there might be another client that's been around for a long time. They contacted us because they just want to be reintroduced and they want to, you know, resurface and refresh and rebrand. You know, so that's a different set of components going on there. So it's hard to say, you know, an amount. It's just more as to the workload in general, because every client.
Right.
You know, have a different workload depending on their focus.
Yeah, I think that's kind of well put. Like, some restaurants may take more time, some it may take more energy. So, you know, but once you've kind of got them up and going, you know, maybe it doesn't take as much, you know?
Right. Or, you know, a client may say, you know, look, we're really not into anything more than, you know, media and social media. Whereas other clients say, you know, bring it on. You know, we want off-premise. We want target marketing. You know, we want you to work with our branding team. You know, it, you know, you can, depending on the team that you're working with, you know, you know, clients, if they're smart, you know, will put their back-end people together, meaning their, you know, their webmaster should be working directly with their publicist. Their right. Social media director, if it's not part of our team, has to work in tandem with us. So it's also kind of divvying up the responsibilities, so to speak. You know, that also has to be established, and everybody has to, it has to work as like as a cohesive team.
Hey, listen, to you talked about your team a minute ago, and you do have a great team. But do me a favor, tell Kate. Whatever event I'm doing from now on, I kind of just want to hang out with Kate. Like, I want her to be there and hang out because she's awesome.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She's yeah. I like it when Kate's around too. She adds this great levity to everything. But yeah. don't let that fool you. She's on it. Definitely on it. But yeah, she lends great energy. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, and then we have Julie, who's our social media director. She's the youngest of the bunch, and by right she should be, because it's social media. And those kids, they speak a different language than we do. So she's, you know, she's our girl. Yeah, yeah. It's people laugh at that. They say, so how old Julie is? She's 25 years younger than me, and that's the way it should be, because she's social media.
That's the person you want. It's a great segue into what I want to talk about next is social media with you. Because me, aside from the hosting stuff and all that, I am a private chef. I do actually get paid money to cook food for people. And it happens to me all the time, Lynn. I got asked again, and by the way, they just booked me officially to do this. I do bachelorette parties in the Hamptons and shit. And I just got booked again to do a party. But the last question they asked me before they officially booked me is they want to know all my social media following. And they want to look me up on social media. And that's the world we live in now. It's amazing how many times, you know, I don't know about other restaurant chefs, but myself as a private chef and a caterer, I get asked that now. It's like a regular question. Like, people want to know. I mean, that's what's happened. That's the world we've lived in now. Food has become all about the pictures as well as just the experience.
Right. It's almost like it's this added badge of honor. You know, you're following, you know, and if someone is going to collaborate with you, they want to collaborate with someone who has a reach. You know, with someone that's going to add to what, you know, like you said, the event, whatever the event is, or if you're hosting, are you going to attract an audience? You know, God forbid someone has to sell tickets to something. You know, they want to make sure that who's ever involved, you know, is, you know, not outwardly selling, but just selling in that, cool. You know, the reach is there. Yeah. I mean, I get it. You know, it makes sense. You know, Andrea, who's our lead PR associate, Andrea every day is looking at these numbers when she's dealing with social influencers, bloggers, media, digital platforms, advertising. She's, you know, I almost feel bad. I feel like she has to like number crunch, you know, so she right. has to make sure that we're going in the right direction. We're making the right decisions. You know, let's say we're spending a client's money on advertising. You know, these are numbers. These are things that we have to know. And one of the things that, you know, she so painstakingly, you know, puts time into is, you know, keeping these databases up to date with those numbers. You know, we stalk some of these social influencers because we're watching their numbers. You know, we're waiting for them to hit 5,000 so we can include them in our database, and so we can invite them to our events, and so that they do have input.
Is that the number?
You know, on our clients.
Is that the number?
5,000.
Quite there.
5,000 for us is a magic number. You know, there's certainly plenty that we incorporate that have, you know, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 following. You know, and that's gonna ebb and flow. You know, we see it happen all the time. But yeah, so we start stalking them.
I think that's important. Now, what's the most important form of social media from a PR standpoint? What do you think is the hot social media these days?
Well, it's definitely Instagram, But here's what we're learning, and the more we do the analytics on it, and even not just outright back-end analytics, even, you know, you can just do straightforward numbers and you can see the activity, you know, in action. It's have to work in tandem. So it's not so much that any one thing, you know, is successful on its own. It's when everything is working in tandem, then you just, you even get more mileage out of it. You know, it's the same thing with PR. So someone will say, you know, well, if you had to do one thing, you know, under a PR campaign, what would it be? I used to try to answer that. I used to say, well, you know, I'd like to see you doing mostly this or that. Now I can't even answer that way, because now it's proven that it's all working in tandem. That's the most effective. It's everything. Right. I can't say, you know, just do target marketing or just try to get as much as you can, because we know that that certainly is not the case anymore. It's everything working together. And I can't stress that enough. And it's like that with the social media. There's times when, you know, clients will say to Julie, oh, you know, we don't need a Twitter. But Julie will always set up a Twitter, always. She'll always do Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Everything she posts on one is always on the other. And there's right. numerous reasons for that, you know, and you know, that might change, but that's been the way that we've, you know, conducted our social media practice, and it does work. It really does.
Well, Twitter's interesting, because when Facebook and Twitter was kind of roughly the same time when they first came out, and I sank all my eggs into the Twitter basket and worked my butt off with everything to build my Twitter following up. And I got there. I was at around 10,000 followers, all organic, just built it up through everything I've been doing. And then recently, the other night, I actually sat in my bed at night and I did a Twitter purge, and I got rid of probably 2,500 followers, just people who aren't active, people who, you know, don't use Twitter anymore, people who don't interact. And I think you're seeing a lot more of that on Twitter these days, where, you know, Instagram, especially for food, is kind of becoming a thing. But what about a Snapchat? Is that something I should be paying attention to?
Probably more so the Facebook Lives. Those work. I mean, those work really well for the food industry. The Facebook Lives, the reach seems to be really good on that. I don't think Snapchat as much. We don't Snapchat. But I, you know, to see even little things within the basic social media channels. You know, we know that videos have you know, a longer life and reach more people.
Sure.
We know that, you know, Twitter, while it's not visual, it's the other form of instant gratifications with just quick messages or promotion codes right. or hashtags that actually lead someplace. So there's different types of quick fixes. Everyone's saying Facebook is dying, but we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing websites are dying and people can put everything that they need for restaurants on Facebook.
Well, that's a great point. That's a great point. And I want to stop you there for a second. That's a really, really good point, because listen, with Restaurant Road Trip, it's interesting because I never even had a Facebook account. Like, it was never something I even dealt with. I thought, oh, come on, who the fuck does Facebook? That's a waste of time. But now that I've been there and been a part of it now, you're absolutely right. Like, you can build your restaurant website on there. You can build your personal, you know, your personal information, your website can all be on there. And I had no idea. I mean, but the best part about it is you can track all that. And that's why Facebook, things like Facebook Watch and things like that are just, they're taking over the world and changing the entire television game.
Yeah. I mean, for a restaurant, their hours are there, their menus, the photos, updated info. You can do the switch outs. You can do the Google searches on it. You can do your words on it. I mean, it's crazy what that is able to do. It gives you a hub. And if you take advantage of everything it has to offer, I mean, it surprises us every day. You know, and listen, I work with some of the best web designers in the hospitality biz, you know, and so I hate to say that I would ever think that, you know, websites would be irrelevant. But I think just like anything else, you know, we're going to see things evolve. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that start to happen more, you know, and it's expensive, you know, it's expensive to have a website and to have a designer, you know, it does get a little pricey, you know, in restaurants, we know restaurants operate on a shoestring, you know, that's another nature of the biz. Right. Working capital is just, you know, I know. Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, whatever
man,
we
really
whatever
is.
We could do to help that. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the restaurant business is a numbers game. It's math. I mean, if you really explain how restaurants make money, and you put it to them by explaining the size of a restaurant, the number of people it can seat, you know, your menu, price points, your food cost, it's just math. You can sit in a math class and then figure out how to run a restaurant. It's all math.
Right. Yeah, that's all it is. It
sounds unexciting, doesn't it?
Well, no. Listen, it's funny because I was horrible at math till I went to culinary school. And then once you actually put, like, it wasn't just a number for me to do an equation out of. It was all of a sudden this number meant something. This number was, you know, sales dollars, or this number was, you know, your
right.
profit dollars. It all of a sudden made a shitload more sense to me. I did great at it. It's funny.
Yeah, I always remember the ham. Yeah. did your professor have you layer the hamburger? So I remember there was the hamburger, and each piece of the hamburger, your meat, your lettuce, tomato, your bun, your this and that, each of it was a dollar sign. And I remember layering the hamburger and coming up with a price point. And to this day.
Wow. Listen, I got to ask you.
Yeah, memories.
Everybody uses hamburgers for analogies. My friend Stephanie Abrams on the Weather Channel, she uses the hamburger for the whole, like, explaining how clouds work. And I'm like, would you stop? It makes no sense. Stop saying that.
We all relate to the hamburger.
Right? I don't know. I just don't get it. So let me ask you this, since we're talking so much about social media with it, and how important is it for, let's say I run a restaurant in Montana, right? And, you know, I have a chance to kind of start doing local TV spots on Montana morning local TV. How important is that? Mm-hmm. Does it make a difference?
I love this question. Oh, goodness gracious. So let's talk about real local. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
We.
Now, wait, do you love
I
it?
Can't tell you
a,
how much.
A brilliant question by me.
I love it. So, yeah. So local media, and much to a chef's chagrin, they're not going to like hearing this. Local mm-hmm. media will put people in your seats. National media will beautifully, wonderfully feed your ego. It'll stroke that ego. It is wonderful for that. It will not put people in your seats. And it has been proven time and time again. Every time the girls and I get a national hit, you know, we leverage it on social media. I mean, we just had one of our girls featured in USA Today, right? USA Today, the top, you know, the top female chef. Oh, it was great. And I adore her. She's our pastry chef over at the Robert Sherman Inn. And it didn't move the needle whatsoever. It was a great kudo. It was a great placement. It was great for us. You know, we love when we can get those hits. But then, you know, a week or two later, she's in the Daily Voice, and people were making reservations because they read about the chocolate menu from the Daily Voice, and they got hit with all these reservations. Now, that's just a really recent and very simplistic example, but it happens time and time again. Yeah, it's you know, listen, people read their local news. They watch their local news. They listen to their local radio. They do. And that, I hope, will never go away. I think the national and the larger outlets, you know, the larger reach is wonderful. It's only wonderful if you leverage it, because not everyone gets USA Today. I mean, do any of your friends get the paper USA Today?
Yeah,
I don't know anyone that does.
If you stay in a hotel, it shows up at your hotel, you know?
Right. Right. So there's no Instant gratification there, because they're not going to read about you and come to your restaurant. So where is it that everybody gets instant gratification? Where is it that everybody can actually have a call to action and act on it? You know, it's just, it's
right
this strange that. Phenomenon. Yeah.
My first
yep. you asked,
dinner,
see?
I did. No, it's a great answer. And it's something like, when you really think about it, because you think of national, you're like, okay, national is important. That's a great thing to do. You know, I mean, national is incredible. Listen, I was a host on the Hallmark Channel for their nationally syndicated show, Better. I hosted the All Recipes segment on there many, many times. That was my job. I got paid a lot of money to do it. It was great. But it didn't help me sell tickets to my pop-up dinner. When the Danbury News Times did an article on me, it's amazing how many people actually contacted you. You're so right about that. God, I don't even know why I bothered asking. If I just thought about it, that's a really good point. I think you're right. Local media doesn't matter. And I think in the world we live in now, with everything being so national, I think that the fact that local TV, local radio. That's their niche. That's how come they're still in business.
Yes, it's needed. It is absolutely needed. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you feel comfortable with it. But wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's hard to convince a chef that, especially a chef, or not even just a chef. It could be a restaurateur, you know, a businessman who just sees it that bigger is better, you know, and it's a very hard thing to explain until it happens.
Right.
You know, and then yeah, it, unfortunately, it's you can't really explain it. They're not going to believe it until it actually happens, and it always happens. I've never, you know, gotten those national hits and then had a client say, "Wow, that really, you know, that really put us on the map." No, it didn't.
You know, that's really good point. And I've been offered to do Dr. Oz, and once here's what happened: I got offered to do Dr. Oz one time, and I couldn't do it because of scheduling, and it was bad. And I've been trying to get back on ever since. I'm pretty sure they're pissed at me because I didn't do it the first time. And I'm like, you know, I really want to do it because I just, yeah, I want to do it. But I don't know how much it actually would really help anything, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, are the people that are watching, and this is, you know, because you brought up Dr. Oz, are the people watching Dr. Oz your potential client catering in the Hamptons? Are they watching Dr. Oz?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, what are you trying to achieve? It's got to be the first question you ask yourself when it comes to doing media, right?
Right. So who are you trying to communicate with? And if you really think about who you're communicating with, you're trying to communicate with potential customers. So that's another thing I always say to my restaurants, especially the ones that start to get a little cocky, a little comfortable. I always say to them, you have to operate every day like nobody knows you.
Yeah.
Every day you have to act like you just opened your doors and nobody knows you, because the minute you start to get comfortable with your regulars, you know, the minute that you start to settle in and you're not putting effort or dollars into marketing. And that's when, you know, there's, since you've opened, 10 other restaurants have opened within a 2-mile radius of you. Since you've opened, some of your clientele has moved. I mean, we're in Fairfield County. We're probably one of the most transient counties on the East Coast. You know, people move constantly. People pass away.
I can go on and on.
From
New York City. You know, I mean, we're 50 miles from New York City. You know, I mean, it's close to it. And listen, if you were my PR person, you would be telling me what I'm about to say. I should never say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think that if you have a restaurant or you have a PR firm, paying to be on local television is something you should never do. How do you feel about that?
Most of the time, if you're paying for marketing and PR, hopefully there's not extra dollars coming out. You know, a lot of that on TV is, you know, there's editorial on TV, there's editorial in print and social media. A lot of these platforms, you know, over the years now have started to charge or have tried to charge. You and I have talked about this before. I think there's, you know, a time and a place where things, you know, maybe should cost some money. But if you have a publicist that's connected and understands the ins and the outs, you know, the retainer that you pay them should cover 95% of your PR and marketing, you know, how much you partner. You know, one of the things we have been paying for, and I'll be really honest about it because we're getting great mileage with it. You know, we are paying, you know, and partnering with some online magazines, like Fairfield After Dark is one of my favorites in Fairfield County. Pam does a really good job.
Great.
Her reach is incredible. Every time we do something with her, we see a spike. It's awesome.
It's funny. I've watched her grow, like watching her grow from when it was very small to what she's done very well with it, which is great. But I think as far as the TV thing, what I mean more along the lines of is, you know, I think that if the chef, you know, reached out, when I first started doing local TV, I just finished doing The Taste on ABC, and I reached out and, you know, I creepily started stalking some of these booking producers on Twitter, and I reached out to them, and it just kind of became a thing where they're looking for content. You know, and if you know, the key thing is just knowing the right person to reach out to, I guess is the key thing there. And, you know, I guess that, I mean, there's probably some worth to having, you know, when you can afford to have a PR person there with you who knows those people, it makes life a lot easier. But I don't know. You really messed me up with your very first comment on this whole topic we just started, because, like, you kind of threw me for a loop there when you're like, listen, if you do USA Today, you know, what happens? Nothing. The Daily Voice, all of a sudden she gets swamped. Like, that kind of screwed up my entire plan.
But it only depends on what you're trying to do. So that example was more geared towards a restaurant, that, you know, someone that has like a brick and mortar restaurant. Like, so who's going to be sitting in your restaurant? You know, so it depends, you know, on what you're looking to do. So, you know, we have some chef personalities that we work with, and it has nothing to do with their restaurant. You know, we work with Bruno Fabio, you know, world pizza champion. He owns umpteen restaurants. He's a hoot, right? We don't have to really worry about the restaurants, because he's not paying us to promote the restaurants per se. He himself. Right. You know, is a talent, you know, within himself, and he has X amount of goals that he wants to achieve. You know, so the things that we pursue on his behalf would be completely different than what we would pursue on a local restaurant's behalf. So again,
came to one of my pop-up dinners and said it's some of the best food he's ever had in the state, and couldn't believe that I wasn't running a restaurant. And when I told him I didn't want to.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, he said that, then that says something, because he's tough. Wow, good
drove
for you.
Drove to Newtown, by the way, to be at the pop-up.
Wow. Yeah, he's a character, and he's quite talented.
Talented guy. Listen, but I want to talk about that with you really quick, though. I want to talk about because we live in the era now, I think we're coming out of it, but we live in the era of chef personalities, and you and I have had conversations offline about this, and it drives me fucking apeshit, Lynn. Like, listen, bottom line is I'm a chef. That's what the fuck I am. I went to school for it. We've established a very long time of my life in it, working in it. You know, you'll never, ever hear me call myself that. You'll never, ever hear me say I'm a celebrity. You'll never hear me say I'm a public figure, like these fucking cocksuckers do on social media these days. Are you kidding me? Just because you lost the second round of Chopped season 47, episode 953, you don't get to call yourself a public figure now. Fucking kill yourself. Sorry, that's how angry I get about it. Like, seriously, why do people think that that's okay? I'll get off my soapbox in a second. Do Chopped. Do those shows. Do those and have a great time with it and use it to promote your brand, to promote your restaurant. Right? But don't do that show. I did Cutthroat Kitchen. I'll never forget the guy who went out after me. I'll never forget. I sat in the hotel bar, and he said he couldn't wait to get called to do his next show. And I said, brother, trust me, no one's going to call you. You have to push and make it happen yourself. No one gives a fuck. It's Cutthroat Kitchen. It is a factory of people. But these people who do these shows, and they don't even win, and they do it in these shows, and then their whole Instagram thing then changed to, I'm a public figure, and I invented this type of cuisine. And by the way, it kills it for people who are working hard and trying to make things happen, who understand how these things work. As a PR person, I'm trying to word it so you don't go down, it doesn't take you to a bad place, but like, just talk. Tell me, What do you think?
Yeah.
It kills me. Like, I have a knife in my hand right now. I just want you to know that's where I'm at.
No. Put the knife down, pick the drink up, and let me share. So
public figure.
The idea of these shows is it's a grand illusion. One of the things that I equated to was years ago, we had a New York Times Connecticut reviewer, and you know, restaurants would wait with bated breath to get their New York Times review, because once they got that New York Times review, they felt like you know it can make them or break them. And you cut to probably 10 years within me being a publicist. 10 years later, one publication after the other started just doing away with the rating systems. But one of the things we noticed was you could get a great review, and it was posted on a Sunday. And my God, by Tuesday, it was forgotten. And I bring that up because it's happening now. It's happening with TV. I remember when they first started going after chefs to go on Chopped. It was about 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, we're really the only hospitality, like, PR firm in this area. at the time. I know there's other publicists that, you know, work with restaurants, but we're strictly, you know, hospitality. So of course that production company was reaching out, you know, when I think Chopped even just first started. And in the beginning, those chefs that would go on probably got a little bit of attention. But here's what's happening now. The show has been on for so long. They incorporated right. all of these other shows that bring on these random chefs from all over. And again, the impact is less. It's become so diluted. So we, you know, we had a chef go on Chopped. The most recently was about a year, year and a half ago. And the same thing happened. He was on Chopped. You know, we did a lead up to it, but we didn't want to overdo it because we didn't want to set him up for, you know, to fail. And he went on, and I think he made it, you know, halfway through. He wasn't the first one to go. But literally, the show was over, and it was just forgotten a day later. And he kept wanting to milk it. You know what I mean? He kept yeah. wanting to post it and mention it. And then, you know, he says, why aren't you saying as seen on Chopped? And I kept reminding him that if I did that, it was forcing it. You know, kind of like when you can't make it happen. You can't force it. And
700 other chefs here in the state, as seen on Chopped. Who gives a fuck?
Right. No one really cares. The accolade is no longer strong anymore because anyone can
right.
go on Chopped. Now, way back when, like, they would actually audition you. My gosh, the process you had. Listen, way back when, you had to be asked to cook at the James Beard dinner. Do you know how you get a James Beard dinner now? You literally just call up and say, I'd like to do a dinner. That's all you do. You hand in a menu and say, you know, it's September. I probably can't get until spring. Okay, I'm going to hand you a spring menu. And that's it. You know, yeah, they look up and make sure you're credible and your restaurant's been open for a while. You have some good reviews.
Right.
But years ago, you had to be asked to cook at the James Beard House.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to be asked. You know, publicists like us just call up and say, hey, we'd like our chef to host a dinner. And then that's it.
Yeah.
So the general public doesn't understand.
Listen, just really quick, and I'll point it out to you. It's really funny. So I judged an event called the Chef's Taste Challenge in New Orleans. I judged it this past year, and I was in it the year before, and I think they're going to ask me to judge it again. Anyway, long story short, I sit beside the person who basically is who makes the schedule for who cooks at the James Beard House, right? And I asked her. I said, listen, I'm a private chef. I've done pretty well for myself. You know, as a private chef, you know, I would love to be asked to come cook at the Beard House. How does that happen? How do you make that happen? And this is the person who books it. I don't want to say her name, but you know who she is. She has red hair.
No, don't.
And oh, I'll say her name. Well, I'm not going to. That would be bad. But I don't want everybody hitting her up on Twitter. But like, she looked at me and she goes, oh, well, can you think you could fill it? You think you as a private chef, you could fill the event? You know? And I was like,
you could
yeah.
fill it.
I mean,
yeah.
Of course we could. And she's like, great. Well, why don't you reach out to me? We'll see if we can make it happen. And listen, people who cook at the James Beard House, there's no money. You actually pay. It costs you money to go in there to buy all the food.
They give you
a
stipend. Yeah, they give you a stipend, but the stipend will never cover it, you know. Yeah.
No. And I was like, really? That's it? I was like, so if I email you, you'll set me up to cook at the James Beard House. You don't really care about the rest of it. She's like, no, as long as you need to sell it out.
You have to fill the room, dude. You have to fill the room. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I'm coming from a world of, you know, learning, you know, Paul Bocuse and studying at CIA. Mm-hmm. And you think of the James Beard House as like this big, like, oh, my God, this it'd be amazing to go be a part of this. And if I want to do it,
yeah.
I just got to email you.
Yeah.
What the fuck? What happened? What happened?
Mm.
All right, sorry.
Well,
that
I think
was my tangent.
But that scenario it plays out in other media arenas and other organizations and whatnot. And again, to the general consumer, it's this grand illusion, you know.
Right.
And there's sometimes I have to tell you, there's sometimes I'm really happy. My girls and I talk about this a lot. Sometimes I'm really happy that the consumers really don't know what goes into it, you know, with certain things, because I think they would be really disappointed.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
there's times. Yeah. Yeah. Right. If you knew, right. It's so true.
Just watch the show. Just watch the show. Don't worry about how we make it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's
and
true.
I believe in that a little bit. I don't know. Listen, it's one of those things. I could talk to you for like 4 hours. You know that, right? Like, I could just keep going. Like, I have so many more things to cover. So, and I think I told you 40 minutes, but if you could go a few more minutes, that'd be awesome. You got a few more minutes?
Sure. Sure. Where are we going to go? It's 11 o'clock at night.
I got places to be. I don't know about you, but...
I'm jealous.
Listen, I told you this is fun, right? Isn't it? Look how quick it's gone. We've just sitting here running our mouths, talking about nothing, having a drink. See?
Yeah. Wow. That was fun.
I know.
All right. Well, what didn't we get to that we should probably get to?
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you. So, I'm a new restaurant, right? I'm opening up. I have, you know, a small budget here for marketing to push my restaurant. It's brand new. I contact you. We work out a deal. What's the next step? What's the most important step for a new restaurant, or maybe it's even an old restaurant trying to revamp themselves? What do you think is the most important first step they should do?
Oh, this is an easy one, and you're going to be so surprised. The first thing that we do has nothing to do with marketing and PR. We sometimes will put people on hold until this is done first. And this happens with existing restaurants just as much as a brand new restaurant. When you set out to do a PR marketing campaign, you're basically exposing yourself, right? So you're wanting to be heard and seen and visited and written about, et cetera. You are literally exposing yourself. So the one thing that I learned the very hard way I learned this, you cannot expose yourself until all your business on the back end is complete. So what I mean by that is all of your platforms on the back end are solid. That means if you have a website, if you have, you know, your social media, you set up your Google places, you're listed where you need to be listed, your service, your food, your space, everything is spot on. So a lot of the times a new restaurant especially will get excited. They want to start right away. They want to hit it really hard. I come in there and I'm like, okay, what about A, B, C, D, and E? And 95% of the time, none of it is done, let alone solid. But they want to embark on a PR marketing campaign. And I put the brakes on it.
Time out. Wait, you mean a restaurant? People opening a restaurant don't have all their shit together before they contact you? I don't believe it. That's bullshit.
Right?
What are you talking about? You can't do the sarcasm in my voice.
And it's rough because you know they're anxious. You know that they opened on a shoestring. You know that without that restaurant getting busy, there's no working capital, you know? And I know that. And it's the whole chicken and the egg. Constantly, it's the chicken and the egg. Like, what do you do first? But what I do know, and this is going back to what I said about learning the hard way, when we did push it and the restaurant wasn't ready, it was a disaster. I was embarrassed. It was the worst. And when that happened, I vowed I would never do that again. I'd rather have people get a little annoyed by my unwillingness to start than my enthusiasm to jump in. I think there has to be first things first, you know, and then we go into an existing restaurant that's been around for a while. And you know what? They're kind of in the same boat. You know, they're still kind of old school. They're not practicing the way that they should be practicing, you know, so we have to go in there and say, okay, well, before we reintroduce you, let's refresh, you know, and again, it's like, okay, let's put the brakes on. Let me get in there. Let me do what needs to be done and update it. And then, then you're ready for your close up. But it takes a lot to be ready for your close-up. And keep in mind, I can't undo stuff. This is, you know, the age of technology. I can't undo bad reviews. I can't undo bad word of mouth. It's there. And it never pays to rush into it. It really does pay to have everything lined up, good to go, and solid. And then it makes the most sense. So, you know, once that is done, then we start to lay down a foundation, you know, and a foundation is consistent messaging. A foundation is, you know, you can't expect people to come to you. Sometimes you got to bring the people in yourself. You know, so we're really fortunate with all the great relationships that we have, and we start bringing them into the restaurant. You know, one of the things that we don't do, though, is do everything all at once. Restaurants want to, you know, hit it hard in the beginning. And I always tell them, if I do that, then, you know, we hit it really hard, and then you got no place to go after that. You have nobody else left, you know. You really do, it does have to be a process that has to be ongoing. It has to be methodical, has to be thought out, it has to be tracked. You know, that's one thing we do on the back end. We keep, you know, really great records of everything. It's tracked, it's managed, it's organized. And again, that might drive some people absolutely insane, but you know, the way what you said in the very beginning, you know, we're in it for the long haul. We're not out to just do these quick fixes. I wouldn't be doing good by a client if that's what I was trying to do, that I wouldn't be doing good by them. So I just, in clear conscience, can't do that. I know a lot of publicists that are perfectly willing to turn and burn. It's just not our MO.
But like, what is the one thing that you would say, hey, you're a new restaurant, you know, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you probably give a consultation before you sign on to work at the restaurant, but and in that, I'm guessing you say you need to do X to get this started. What is X? What is that one thing? Is it, hey, you need a bigger social media campaign, or let's get you on local radio promoting, which in local radio, for those of you who don't believe it, local radio is still a thing. It's still really important.
Mm-hmm.
And most people would be amazed how much audio marketing makes a big difference. But
it's awesome.
What is the one thing that you throw at them? You say, hey, we can help this happen, which will make a difference pretty quickly. I know it's hard to say because each scenario is different, but if there was one thing that you could point out to say, listen, this restaurant has X amount of dollars, they want to spend it on this.
I can't. I don't have that smoking gun anymore. I really don't.
It's like talking to a casting director with you. Jesus.
I know, right? I know. It's horrible. Listen, that was the very first thing we started off with was I said, you know, everything has to work together. Everything has to be cohesive. There is no one, you know, there is no one thing that's going to make or break anybody. You know, and it's also, there is no one thing that's going to break anybody just as much as there is no one thing that's going to make you, you know, it takes a lot for a restaurant to go down just as much as it takes one, you know, to succeed. But I don't have that smoking gun. I really don't. I find that, you know, here's what I will say is necessary. Somebody spearheading your marketing is necessary. So now there are times, and I've done this where, you know, I've done PR for a couple months, got them, you know, up, you know, on their feet, and they couldn't afford it. And I said, okay, we'll give you your ace in the hole in the restaurant that when I leave is going to spearhead this, who's going to manage this, and is going to keep track of it. So is, you know, hiring a publicist necessary? You know, if you're able to, absolutely, it's, you know, a publicist just has the relationships and hopefully the expertise. But if not, have somebody within your organization that's their sole responsibility, you know. But once you start like splitting it up, you ever have restaurants and you say, oh, who does your social media? And then they'll say, oh, our staff. And so that's why their social media is like all over the place. You know,
right.
it's not cohesive. You know, it's not consistent.
It's funny because you look at so Hoodoo Brown's a great example. Hoodoo Brown, Ridgefield, Connecticut. They're renowned throughout. They're nationally renowned for what they do. Their Instagram is huge, but it is Cody. No, it's Chris. Sorry, you know, one of the owners there. He just takes pictures of their platters of food and posts them, and it's amazing. And he does it so regularly. How important do you think it is to just be consistent, be regular, be on a regular basis?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about laying down the foundation. So you know what? Okay. So if you really do want me to answer that question, like if you had to be one thing, it's going back to doing something that's always going to be consistent. So if it's some form of social media that you do really well, you take great photos, you have a lot of fun with it, and you start to develop a following, that's great. Maybe you even put a little extra dollars into boosting Facebook. You know, I mean, that works. It really does work. You know, you do reach more people. You know, one of the things with laying down a foundation is that we make sure we get some of our ace in the hole writers in there. You know, because we have writers that we know always want to work on our clients because we give them great photos and you know, feed them good content and we make them visit it, you know. So yeah, are there quick fixes in that way? There sure are. It none of them can stand alone, but at least it'll start to lay down your foundation. You know, and if you're going to do social media, unless you're consistent, just take it down. And don't do it. Because I've had writers go to social media pages and say things like, well, they haven't posted in 2 months. And what that does, it gives the consumer as well as the writer, you know, this like they lose confidence in that place. They think they're unorganized, you know, and if you don't have a decent website, take it down. Because if someone goes to that website and it doesn't represent you, people will make a decision off of something that they see. And if it turns them off, it'll turn them off to your restaurant. And we've had it happen many times. You know, we had a restaurant do Groupon, and I had a writer say, you know, we were just going to include them in something. And now we saw them on Groupon. They took them out of the article because in their experience,
why?
Groupon meant that because in their experience, they thought like if it was a full-scale restaurant doing Groupon, that meant that they were having difficulty. So a writer didn't want to write about a restaurant that had the potential of going out of business because then the writer, you know, no writer wants to write about something and then they're gone a month or two later. And so we've even had writers be very strict with us. Well, yeah,
but it does. Works in the business, you know.
That's right.
And just kill yourself. Sorry.
Just
stop it. That's all I got to it. I mean, honestly, like, I don't know.
Well,
that's
you know what, you're getting irate about it and you should, but then understand that a publicist knows the game to play, you know, whereas like an owner or a chef may not understand the finer nuances of what goes on behind the scenes and how things are perceived. And again, an experienced writer with strong relationships will know this.
I'd be your worst client ever. You're like, Plum, please stop talking.
Yes, I know. I don't think I would let you come to meetings. I think I would just have you show up when it was time and then just have someone shuffle you off.
people like me, believe it or not, Lynn. They really do. They like me. I don't know.
We were just talking about the Grand Illusion. I know.
That's right. Listen, final thoughts. I want to ask you because we have a lot of young culinarians and young cooks who check out this program. If you, as a PR person, were going to give a young cook, a young chef, advice, maybe they've got their first executive chef job or they're taking over a restaurant or coming in and they want to promote themselves in the business, what's the best way to do it? What's the best advice you give them?
Immerse yourself in the industry. Meet other chefs. Go to other people's restaurants. Just become one, literally, I know it sounds corny, just become one within your industry and learn your craft. It's amazing the amount of attention that you will get by just working really hard, keeping your head down, and just be, you know, knowing your craft, knowing the other chefs. It's actually a pretty cool club to be in, you know. And when everyone plays nice in the sandbox together, isn't it amazing? Isn't it this great camaraderie? This great educational system. I mean, that's what I would tell young chefs. Don't go in there trying to be a star. You know, I don't. What said that David Burke story when he called in a young chef and the chef really impressed him, and then he lost the job because he also said to David Burke, "Oh, and by the way, I'm good on camera." And David Burke kicked him out of his kitchen. David Burke gave him his marketing orders. He said, "Kid, you had me. You had me just by cooking. You had me by showing up on time. You had me. And then you told me you were good on camera." No, that's not the way to go.
Wow. Listen,
yeah.
I talk about it all the time on this program, man. It's funny, man. I think that everybody, these kids come out of culinary school now, and I know we got to wrap up here, but these kids come out of culinary school now, like, I want to be a celebrity chef. And to me, though, especially in my world, those things of doing the, I've done Food Network 12 times. I've done a lot of things, and all that is a byproduct of 25 years of experience in this business. That all is because of the fact that I've been doing this for so long. Like, that's not what my goal was. That wasn't even a thing when I first started. My goal was to keep a roof over my head and put food on my table and be able to buy beer on Friday nights when I got off of work. That was my goal. to pay my rent. It wasn't to come out and say, you know what? I'm going to be a celebrity chef. I'm going to be on this show. I'm going to do that. No, 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 no. All that is a byproduct of a lot of hard work. And I think a lot of kids need to do that these days.
And continued hard work. Right. Yeah. And it could also, you know, it could be just as fleeting, you know, and so even when you achieve that, you still need to maintain some integrity and work ethic.
Wait, do you mean because I've done Chopped, Cutthroat Kitchen, and Guy's Grocery Games, that the world's not going to come knocking at my door? Wait, what?
I'm so sorry. I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, the sarcasm. Yeah. Listen, Lynn, I think there's been a lot of education here in this episode. I think a lot of people could have learned a lot from you, and I would love to bring you on. I do roundtables sometimes with several chefs, and I think you would actually be a different voice to have at the table next time we do one of these. I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Oh, I would love that. I love speaking with chefs, and I love speaking with industry people. Yeah, I would love that.
Did anybody else just sit there and cross their fingers and hope she said, I love talking to you? Like, that would have been great, but you did throw that in there.
Yeah, I just thought it was a given.
All right. And by the way, what are you wearing? I'm just saying.
I told you, right? Being on the phone late at night, it's like you can't help it.
You can't help it. There you go. Lynn, you're the best. I appreciate it. Make sure you follow MaxX on Instagram at MaxXPR on Instagram. They do some great work, man, and it's really educational to hear a PR standpoint as opposed to a chef standpoint. So, Lynn, I appreciate your time this evening. Thank you very much. And, again, thank you for your kind words and giving us the opportunity of the restaurant road trip. We really, really, truly appreciate it.
Oh, I'm having such fun with that. Such fun with that. Thank you.
Well, you're the best, and I look forward to chatting with you on down the road, okay?
All right. You're stuck with me, Chef Plum.
I hope so. That's what I want. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right. Thanks.
Good night. There she goes, guys. That's Linda Kavanaugh from MaxXPR. What a great conversation that was. Very educational. We learned a lot from that. I mean, honestly, I kind of feel justified in some of the things I said. She helped me feel good about it. So anyway, there you have it. Guys, if you haven't done so yet, please make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It does a lot for us. If you have any questions about this, feel free to reach out to me or to MaxXPR on Instagram. Lynn's a great person. She's willing to help, and she's one of the people who – she's one of us, you guys. She's one of us. I don't know how else to put it. She's one of us. That's all you got. I mean, honestly, like, she's been there. She's worked a line. She's been there on a Mother's Day working. She's been there on the holidays working a line. She knows what it's like. And that's what, to me, I think is important to have someone on your team who's doing your marketing who gets it. And Lynn definitely gets it. So big shout out to her. Thank you for coming on the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Chef Plum. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Make sure you give it the time it deserves. I'll see you next week. Peace.
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I came.